Here we go.
About 10 years ago, I went on my first retreat with a wonderful monk named Ajahn Sasita, who I really admire deeply, and he played a profound role in the course and direction that my spiritual practice took after that period. And at the time, I was going through a very difficult depression, and my practice was not really helping me alleviate it, and a lot of the tools that he provided were really fundamental. So tonight I'm going to give one of the talks that a talk about some of the concepts that I've learned and developed from those initial studies with that monk. He calls this idea the inner tyrant. I like to think of it as the inner bully. Basically, we all, I think, or at least most of us, have bullying thoughts that are basically that voice in the mind that is really dissatisfied with us, really dissatisfied with where we are in our lives, dissatisfied with what we've accomplished, dissatisfied not only in a grand scheme, but also on a moment-by-moment basis, just commenting. You know, we could be at a group of people or at a party, a social event, and there's that voice that says, you're not funny, you're not smart enough, everybody else is dressed better, you know, why did you say that joke? That was stupid. What's the matter with you? This is a date. Why can't you say anything interesting? So that's one quality of the inner tyrant or the inner bully. The other, perhaps for me, the most salient point of the inner bully is that everything it says is very, to use a big word, globalizing, which means that it's not just picking out specific actions that we take that it's dissatisfied. It's saying, it uses every action, it points to every action that we do as a, it's making a case against us as a human being. So it never says, that thing you just did was really dumb. It says, you're dumb because you just did that. In other words, it's making a statement about our identity. It's not limiting it to simply the actions. It's saying, wow, I can't believe you're so lame. I can't believe you're so this, so that. If it was simply leaving the comments to just the actions, they would be painful enough. But the fact that our inner bully is very opportunistic. It jumps on every mistake we make, every lost opportunity, everything we regret, anything that we feel ashamed about, any awkwardness, and it uses it to build a case that there's something wrong with us, something, a reason why we'll never be happy or we won't be happy right now. And it doesn't just limit itself to thoughts. It can be in the body, just this feeling of discomfort that we constantly have to move. We can't settle down. It could be just a mood of dissatisfaction that doesn't even translate specifically into thoughts. It's just, ugh, me again. or, you know, why don't I feel differently? So it's a combination of dissatisfaction, nothing is ever good enough, and also it points fingers not just at the actions that we've made, but it makes a larger case that there's something wrong with our core identity. And it plays a lot of tricks. I mean, sometimes it can be just mean-spirited, like when we go through a breakup, it's the first voice in the head. And what does it tell us? You'll never find anybody ever again. It's rare that we have the voice saying, oh, you know, that sucks, that was painful, but we'll get through it. No, it's, you're never going to think.
another person as good looking as Edwin. It was a fluke.
We're sort of cowering, and it's so straightforward and authoritative in the way it speaks to us. It is really hard to argue back and say, well, if I attracted my last girlfriend or boyfriend, whatever, and they were pretty attractive to me, that I probably can find somebody else. No, we don't.
Voice, you're never going to find anybody ever again.
When you're at their job, and your job sucks, and you want to quit your job,
you're never going to find another job, because you're a fraud. You can't do what you do. They just haven't discovered that you suck.
So that's in its most downer, mean-spirited, pain in the ass. But then it can be very also enticing as well. When it can tell us, oh, if you only got a bigger apartment or got rid of that roommate, everything would be okay. But it's only because you have a roommate that your life sucks right now. So it's setting a bar. Yeah, everything would be okay if just we got a slightly better job, a slightly better place to live, we slightly made a little bit more money, whatever. It's constantly raising the bar. So we think, okay, maybe that's true. Maybe if I do undertake this assignment that my head is giving me, then I will be able to be capable of happiness, capable of peace. But it's a trick. Because whenever you do fulfill the assignment, it raises the bar. I got the apartment you told me I had to get. Your furniture is ugly. What? You told me if I got an apartment, everything would be... No.
Your furniture is ugly.
Okay, I'll work hard and I'll get furniture. So you work hard to get the furniture. So look, I got the apartment and the furniture. And
you never throw any parties. Nobody's ever here. What good is it? Nobody knows you have this place.
So we follow. This is what's known as samsara. Samsara is this endless quest that we're on, trying to get to the point where we think we're worthy of happiness and worthy of love. The problem is we're constantly moving the bar just a little bit further and further each time, so that we never actually get there. And the answer, of course, is to give up that chase entirely. So it also, this voice gives us the illusion that it's the thing that's keeping us respectable. If I didn't have that voice, I would just be a blob lying in bed. It's the voice that's getting me out of bed and that's the thing that helps me produce and ever since I've been in school, if I didn't get on my back, I just wouldn't do my assignment. Bullshit, really. It's just the voice that's there when we run out of time and we're stressed out, and it raises up and it whips us into doing something that we would have done anyway. It just makes it all more unpleasant. And then it takes credit for everything that we do. In my experience, I get out of bed on the days when I don't have that voice screaming at me. I don't just lie there like a blob. But that voice justifies its existence by telling us that if we didn't listen to this inner criticism, this inner taskmaster, whatever, we would not accomplish anything. The idea being that being just who we are, we don't deserve love and happiness. We have to do things. we have to accomplish and build and create. And that's where we get our rights to be, to feel that we deserve love. So, but the most diabolical element of this voice is that it's so, it has a so fearful and so off balance that when we do make errors of judgment in life, which all of us do, because we become aware of those mistakes via this beating up voice that tells us there's something wrong, not just with the action, but with us, what happens is we try to defend ourselves. We self-justify. So if we get really pissed off at work because we have too much on our plate, and suddenly we get frustrated and we take it out on somebody around us at work, and then the voice in our head says, "Oh, look at you. You suck. You just screamed at, you know, you just got angry and frustrated." And then the other part of the brain goes, "Well, I'm really just overwhelmed and they're just putting too much on my plate and I just don't know what the fuck's going on here and nobody listens to me and fuck you."
"No, you just really suck."
So we have this back and forth between the inner bully and the inner justifier. Now, if the inner bully didn't present its case in terms of there's something wrong with me when I do make an error in judgment, when I create an action that's not skillful, if it simply said, "Hey, that action, getting short-tempered, getting frustrated, or acting out on an addiction, or whatever it is, that thing you just did, you're not comfortable with it. It doesn't make you feel good. You might want to notice that and not do that again." If that's the way it spoke to us, we probably would get a lot further along in self-correcting. But because it speaks not only to the action, but makes its assertions about our core identity, we feel under attack by it. And then sometimes we're so used to this idea that we have to conflate actions into core identities. When we speak to other people, we don't say to them, "Hey, you know, why did you cut me off?" The New York way is, "Hey, you son of a bitch! You fucking asshole! What the fuck are you doing?" We have this built because it's in our minds. It's the way we learn that you call out mistakes. You simply don't say, "Hey, that was inconsiderate. Hey, that was dangerous." We say, "Hey, dickhead!" I don't know what that dickhead means, but... Funny if there was a guy who actually had a dick head. I don't even know what that. Anyway, so the idea is that you get the idea. It's, we have this bully. It's very negative. It's very unsatisfied, and then it takes its toll by keeping us on journeys of self-improvement that we never get still any self-acceptance. And B, it undermines our ability to acknowledge mistakes because every time it points them out to us, it doesn't simply say, "Hey, that action causes suffering." It says, "You suck." And it's very difficult to take a constructive lesson from somebody who's not just attacking the or calling out the action, but who's making an attack on our very core being. So, there are, thankfully, tools that we can use to lessen the influence of the bully in our minds. That voice that's beating up on us. And this is important because in my experience, if we empower that bullying voice, if we listen to it and we allow it to dictate how we act, then what happens is we're empowering it throughout the entire course of our lives. Meaning, we like to think, well, yeah, I do need a kick in the butt when it comes to doing work or doing my art, because if I didn't, I would just not accomplish anything. But if we empower that voice of you're not good enough, then that voice will comment on everything. Not just art or work. It'll comment on you as a human being. It'll come out when you look in the mirror. It'll come out when you're when it's time to, you know, reward yourself for any endeavors. It will be there all the time. It's not a voice that can be compartmentalized. It's a voice that's also much stronger in our culture than it is in Eastern Buddhist cultures. There's lots of stories of when the monks came from the East in the 1970s and were bringing Buddhist practice at the invitation of Westerners who wanted to have the practice brought to the U.S. A lot of the practitioners would ask monks, so, you know, how do you work with self-hate, self-judgment, self-criticism? And the monks would be like, what? Because in their culture, the emphasis upon comparing and competing for worthiness is so much less prevalent. Any time in our life we're competing against others or we're comparing ourselves with others, that's when this voice is going to be the loudest. For instance, if you're looking for a job and you're competing with others, or if you're, you know, in the dating arena, which these days I hear from my younger friends is much more with the whole, you know, okay, Cupid and all that. You're competing, trying to get that person to like you. So you're trying to say the perfect funny thing. So it's a competition. And so that voice kicks up. Other areas in life when we're less competitive, we're less comparing ourselves with others, that voice doesn't kick up as much. For example, in the beginning of yoga practice, when we're looking around, oh, that dog, downward facing dog, that's pretty fucking good. I kind of suck. But I'm so much better than that fucker. Look at that. That's terrible. You know, and then after a while you finally hear the teacher saying, don't look at other people, just focus inwards. And then you do, and then that voice gets quieter and quieter because we're not comparing ourselves with others. It's no longer a competition. So where there's competition, where there's comparison, there's the inner bully. So some of the tools to alleviate the inner bully. The first is when the Buddha was asked, what is the safest place for us in the world? He said, the body. The body. The body is where the world ends. And what that means is all the dangers of the world, the competition, the fear, the comparing ourselves with others, the feeling of not being good enough. If we simply go into the body sensations and we try to get a sense of movement and flow in the body, if we relax the body doesn't have any stories about us. The body doesn't say, hey, you suck. Why are you coming down here now after ignoring me for years? It doesn't say that. The body accepts any amount of attention and care that we give it. And it's a refuge. It's a place where there's unlimited amounts of peace to be developed. No matter what you're going through in life, no matter how stressful, you could be going through a breakup, could be going through tensions at work, we could be in all kinds of stress and family relationships and dramas, But when we focus down into the body, we'll find so much of that stress is carried down in our chest and in our shoulders and in our jaw. And if we release the physical stress, so much of the tension that's making the drama of our life unbearable will be released. No matter what we're going through in life, we can make it so much less difficult if we learn to bring our awareness into the body and relax and release the tension we carry in. So that's really the first tool. When we are disembodied, when we're not aware of the body, when we're up in our heads, guess who we're sitting right next to? Any guesses? The inner bully. The inner bully is right next to you, because that's where the inner bully exists, in your head. So if you only have awareness of the head, we're not aware of the body, you're sitting, it's like you're like in a classroom and you're going to sit right next to the most mean-spirited, unhappy, resentful character in there. You could get a huge distance. You could sit down in the body. That's like sitting across the entire room. You don't have to, you can see the person from a distance and decide whether you're going to listen to them or not. But if we're all the time in our head, it's like we've moved right up next to the inner bully. And we're like, what do you got to tell me now? The inner bully, the saddest thing is that it's so loud and so repetitive at times in our lives when we're depressed or going through a difficult experience, that we can mistake that voice for who we are. So we reach the really awkward position of believing our core identity is a voice that tells us that we suck, that we're not good enough. And that's really the worst state of affairs we can wind up in. So the second way of diminishing the power of this inner critic is to develop an awareness in our practice that's distant from it. We don't only have to use the body. We can, as we did in this opening meditation, we can use sounds. We can use body contact. We can use anything that gives us a little bit of a grounding tool to keep us away from that voice, so that we sit outside of it and we don't fall into identification with it. So for example, very often when I hear that voice, when I start getting down on myself, I immediately bring my awareness into the body, and then I make sure that my senses are also open. I can hear sound, feel contact, smell, all the senses, so that I'm not sucked into this criticism story. The third is to really develop a tool that allows us to self-diagnose when we make mistakes, that doesn't rely on a bullying tendency inside. So when we do make an error in judgment, when we act unskillfully, when we fall back into an addictive pattern, when we chase after someone that's inappropriate, when we do all the things that everybody does, the first thing is to, before we jump on the self-improvement kick, just remind ourselves, it's universal. The bully thrives on the idea that there's something wrong specifically about you. You're the fucker that made the mistake. Nobody else does that. But when we stop and we say to ourselves, okay, I made an error in judgment. It's not unique. A lot of other people make errors in judgment in this exact same domain. So what do we do then? Then we say, okay, we look. How do we feel? We simply ask, how do I feel right now having done that? You scan the body, you scan the mind, and you see that we feel uncomfortable. The body's tense. If we act out, we yell at somebody, the body will feel tense and locked up into battle. The mind will be filled with self-justification and anger and frustration. And none of that feels good. So we don't need to do anything other than ask ourselves, okay, I've done something that feels kind of shitty. Let me just acknowledge that. Let me become aware of how I feel after I've done that. When we really feel the long-term results of an unskillful action, what winds up happening is we stop doing it. The thing that keeps us trapped into repeating unskillful actions is when we shout at ourselves, we beat up on ourselves, and then we defend the actions, and then we get caught up in this internal debate, and the entire action itself that we want to address is lost in the shuffle. So if we start out so much gentler and simply say, okay, this action, a lot of other people do it, that doesn't mean it's okay. It makes you feel kind of shitty. We don't want to feel shitty. Let's try our best to stop doing it. This is the instructions that the Buddha gave to his son Rahula. He didn't say, when you make a mistake, beat up on yourself. He simply said, when you make a mistake, acknowledge it, notice how it makes you feel. If you don't know how to stop doing it, find somebody who's wise, who's gone through the process of alleviating that addiction, and talk to them. You don't need to turn it into a statement about yourself. It's essential to use, wherever possible, the carrot, not the stick in life. The stick, beating up on ourselves, as a motivation tool, simply doesn't work. When we beat up on ourselves, when we add agitation and stress, it doesn't get us out of habits or tendencies. It ingrains habits and tendencies. The more stress, the more we act out of bad habits. The only way to liberate ourselves from habits that we see cause suffering that we don't want to repeat is by being kind and gentle and saying to ourselves, okay, let's try to change just a little bit, and for every little bit we change, I'm going to feel really good about that. I'm going to stop and reflect and just acknowledge that I'm putting some effort into this. For example, use the example of somebody who's spending way out of control. The normal tendency is, when people have out of control spending, is they they'll come home with shopping bags. What is it, Zara? Like a Zara shopping bag? Top Man, Zara. They put it down, another pair of shoes, another coat. And then there's the, I can't believe I did that. I don't even have enough money to pay my last dental bill. And I just bought something I don't need. What the fuck's the matter with me? So that's the voice of, we just made a mistake. Then what happens is the counter voice of, well, I work really hard and I deserve to get myself something nice. It was a really hard week and I was really stressed out and I needed to take care of myself. And thus the battle goes. Instead, if we simply notice, okay, I'm spending too much. Next week, if I spend a little bit less than I've been spending of late, I'll stop and I'll just reflect on how much effort that took and how in my long term it's going to make me feel better about myself and it's going to cause less stress. I'll feel less tense. So next week, if we spend a little less and we stop and we notice and we sit and we ask, how does it feel to ourselves? Do I feel better? And if we've moved a little bit in the right direction, there'll be a sense of something's accomplished. The body will feel better and the mind will feel less agitated. And so we're rewarding ourselves for our efforts rather than beating ourselves up for the tendencies we need to address. This is how we change. It's essential to develop the tools of reflecting on our skillful accomplishments, because this will be the tools that guide us through change in life. The inner bully, all it's going to be is a passenger in the mind. But the goal is to develop an entirely new way to call out times when we've acted inappropriately in a way that's much more conducive to change in the long term. So that's it. I hope there was something worthwhile to think somewhere in there about. I really thank you for listening. And now's your turn to ask any questions about any of the, from the meditation to the talk I gave, to any other subjects that are going on in your spiritual practice. And I thank you for coming to Dharma Punks. So now we need a really brave... Oh, hi. There's the hand.
I have had someone recently that is...